You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Art Focus with host Joseph Galavan. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. Open daily December 17th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade art, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at Southwest Ankeny and Nato Parkway in Waterfront Park. Information at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream.
My name's Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week is Julia Dolan. She's the Minor White Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum. She's here to talk about Blue Sky, the Oregon Center for the Photographic Arts at 40. Welcome to KBOO, Julia.
Thank you.
So everybody in Portland probably knows Blue Sky Gallery. It's been around 40 years. It used to be in a little house in the northwest area, and now it's got its swanky place on the North Park blocks.
It does. It has its own owned space now.
And so your museum is celebrating their existence with a big show. How many people have they shown over the years?
Blue Sky, in the past 39 going on 40 years, has shown over 650 artists in over 750 exhibitions, which is an unbelievable amount of work to show. At the beginning, in the smaller space that they had on Lovejoy, because there were no real operable windows, it would get too hot in the summertime. So they would close down for the summer. So they were averaging maybe about 12 shows a year, maybe a little bit more in the first years. But they have since become much more consistent in showing at least two artists per month.
As you walk in, there's this antechamber with lots of pictures framed, and to find out what they are, you have to go to the end and read, the who's who.
Right.
Why did you set it up like that?
I've worked in this space before. If you enter this first gallery space, you might notice that it's actually very much like a hallway. It's very long and it's very narrow. And as a curator, that is difficult to work in. But what I really wanted to do on that space, because it is so narrow and closer, is give a feeling for how many exhibitions over 4 decades Blue Sky has done. And one way to do that is to create a salon style wall. And when I say salon style wall, I mean I'm not hanging a single photograph with 24 inches on either side of it and nothing above it and nothing below. I'm doing it like one would in an art salon in the 19th century with paintings, where I hang them from floor to ceiling. And because of the critical mass of imagery, and it's all different and it's from all time periods, I felt that that would give people, as soon as they enter, the concept, the feeling of just how much work Blue Sky has shown in the past 40 years.
And then within that space, there are a few other pictures sort of on their own with titles. One of them is called Untitled Explosion Number 2 by a guy called Jeffrey Short. And it is just a fireball. It's just amazing.
That's exactly what it is. It's a fireball. He sets off these wonderful, spectacular explosions. And he's interested, I think, in the time-based nature of those explosions, but the spectacle of them as well. And I think, in many ways, for me, the reason why I placed it next to the introductory text to the exhibition is that, in some ways, Blue Sky, when it was established in 1975, was incendiary. It was something that wasn't being done throughout the country, throughout the world, all that often. Photography was not as well respected as an art form as it is today. So for five people to get together and say, we need to show photography regularly in Portland, it was this explosion of an idea that just took off. And what I love about Jeffrey's image as well is that there's this little corner of the ground in the foreground, and then this beautiful explosion that's abstract and gorgeous and hot and fiery. And then you do have a sense of blue sky behind it. So there are these, for me, wonderful conceptual links to the idea of blue sky and the kind of fire in the belly of blue sky and this beautiful image of this moment.
It's one of the things you get to do as a curator, right?
It is, and that's why I love my job.
Well, inside, one of the first pictures you see is called Chris and the Bubbles, and it's by Terry Todemeyer, who everyone remembers from working at the museum. He was the head of photography then and a great photographer himself. So he's taking this snap, really. I mean, it's not a very good picture, is it? It's just a guy. He looks like he's asleep, covered in Christmas ornaments.
Now, I would beg to differ, and I will tell you why. Other people might agree with you. Other people might not. So the first room is the first decade of blue sky.
Yeah.
And what I love about that room, sort of like the Jeffrey Short image, is that I feel like you can feel the excitement that the founders of Blue Sky Gallery were feeling. And Terry Todemeyer was one of the five founders of Blue Sky Gallery, along with Christopher Rauschenberg, who is the subject of that photograph. Mm-hmm. And then the other founders were Craig Hickman, who currently is teaching at the University of Oregon, Robert DeFranco, who is a photographer still, and then Anne Hughes, who was trained as a graphic designer but fell in love with photography. So these five people came together and were so energized by photography, energized by their own photography, energized by their friends' photography, and wanted to see more of it. What you see in the first couple of years of Blue Sky is works by the founders, and then works by their friends and their colleagues, and the circles get larger and larger as time goes on. But what I love about the photograph of Chris and the Bubbles, not only does it record a moment in time when Chris and Terry and the others were actively thinking about photography and showing it in Oregon at a time when people weren't all that interested in photography as an art, is that they are using materials that were also very popular at the time. So that's an infrared film shot. Mm-hmm. So that's why it looks so grainy. It looks kind of funky and otherworldly. You can also see some other influences when you look at that image. Bubbles are actually floating by. Why are his eyes closed? It feels very snapshot. There's a hot kind of flash feel to it as well. Mm-hmm. And it's not a perfectly composed image. So there are influences of, say, street photographers like Gary Winogrand and others. There's this kind of jarring movement in the image. So even though Chris seems very placid and quiet and his eyes are closed, it's an electric image. Bubbles are floating by.
These bubbles, aren't they transparent Christmas ornaments?
You know, they might be. I thought they were.
Oh.
I have always thought that they were soap bubbles. But again, this is what happens when different people look at a photograph. You will see things that I don't. And that's what I love about photography. And I love hearing people's reactions to things. Sometimes I don't see exactly what's happening. And sometimes you might see something that isn't happening, but you interpret it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so photography can sometimes be very open-ended in that way.
So makes me think of Gus Van Sant, who always went around with a camera taking stills, even though, you know, his life was movies. Mm-hmm. And he would take pictures at parties. And that feeling that the camera was a kind of a tool, but only you had it, you know, and it wasn't everyone taking pictures of each other. It was just the person who'd be bothered to buy film and develop it.
Sure.
So was that how things were in the 70s?
There is this interesting argument that crops up every, say, 15 to 20 years that, oh, now everybody's a photographer because we have phones. And so everybody has a phone in their pocket. So everybody has a camera in their pocket. Well, that same argument was made in the 1890s when Kodak released these cameras that anybody could use. And then Polaroid cameras came along. So everybody had cameras. So I don't know if that argument necessarily holds true. You don't see as many photographs from that time, certainly, because it wasn't quite as easy. Digital didn't exist. I would argue, though, with this group of people that there were probably a lot of cameras in the room when they had parties.
Yeah. But do you think they were going out to set up shots? You know, like Terry would shoot geology and take a few days over it.
Yeah, he did that later. So what you're seeing in the exhibition, and there are two photographs by him, actually. There is one on the salon wall, too, is earlier work before he moved into photographing the landscape with precision, incredibly carefully, and so on. So you do feel this excitement. Chris Rauschenberg talks about times when they would pass around a camera and just hold on to it and take a photograph and then pass it to the next person. And that person would take a photograph on the same roll of film, advance the film, pass it to the next person. So there's this wonderful, almost surrealist movement, kind of exquisite corpse of a roll of film going on. So there's just wonderful, young, exciting energy mm-hmm. around photography that was happening with these people in the mid-1970s.
One of the next pictures is by Robert DiFranco, one of the founders, and it's called, it's untitled 1977, and it's shot from inside a car looking out at mm-hmm. night, and the flash picks up like some kind of fir tree, you know, leaves.
Absolutely. And what I've loved about that photograph is the reaction that people have to it, and people gravitate to that image for some reason, and there is something wonderful about being enclosed in this car space, and we can think about car culture, and then this open window and this inability perhaps to get out of the car on that side because that fir tree is right up next to that window. And why is Robert taking a photograph within a car, probably with a flash that blows out some of the metallic parts of the car? There are so many different things going on in that image that it seems very simple, a photograph made in a car, mm-hmm. but people really react to it and are enthralled by that image.
You know, I thought it was a Christmas tree inside a car, stuffed in the trunk, and they were taking it home.
Yeah.
Then I realized we were inside the car.
We
just project whatever we're thinking at the time.
Absolutely. Christmas. And I think it's an artist's responsibility to, at some point, give some guidance about what their thoughts are. But at any given point, you have to release that image into the world and allow people to bring their own ideas to it.
Kathy Koretsky did a piece in the show called Cody, made in 1985, and it's 35. They're called, what are they called?
They're actually prints. Polaroid prints, but
they
have
a fancy name.
The fancy name is dye diffusion.
Okay.
And we just use that as a standardizing term, but it's a grid of Polaroids.
So it's kind of like David Hockney.
Yes.
Different perspectives on a little boy in his bedroom.
Absolutely.
So he appears two or three times and all the perspective is sort of staggered.
Right. And I think it's really fun to see how someone is using a medium. We often think of the Polaroid as a single object, but here she is in a la Hockney, if you will, making a mosaic. And it is my understanding, although I don't know much about Koretsky's work, I believe that Cody is her son. And so she is making a really complex portrait of this child. And when we think of children, he may be 5 to 7 years old in this image. The movement that 5 to 7 year old children have is very energetic. And to try to encompass him in 30 some odd Polaroids while making a unique single image out of this mosaic, I think is a really wonderful challenge and a wonderful way of using the Polaroid form.
Mm-hmm. And who is Kathy Koretsky?
Well, that's a great question. Something that I encountered as I was putting this exhibition together is the range of notoriety of various photographers. So someone like Gary Winogrand, who's included in the show, or Nan Golden, many, many people know. They still have dealers. They are people I can find on the internet very easily, and there are many published books about them. And then there are particular photographers who may not be making photographs anymore. So especially in the 1970s and 1980s, when I would go down a particular corridor, if you will, of an idea, I might end up at a dead end because that person is perhaps no longer photographing. That person has passed away, and their legacy has not been brought forward and moved into the realm of the library or of the internet. So Koretsky is someone who I had a difficult time finding. Chris Rauschenberg is an incredible repository of information. His brain pretty much is the archive of Blue Sky Gallery. But even he was not able to track her down. The trail kind of ended. But her photograph is in a private collection in Portland, and I saw it and really engaged with it. And I felt that it was a particular moment that was probably important in Blue Sky's history and deserved to be seen.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week is Julia Dolan. She's the Minor White Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum. And she's here talking about Blue Sky, the Oregon Center for the Photographic Arts at 40. There's a photo by Les Crims, and it looks like a kind of, well, the title gives it away, wary, camera-savvy, ultra-liberals. People at Martha's Vineyard standing in a line, and they're kind of well-to-do. It's 1989, so some of the fashions are interesting. A lot of sweaters tied around the shoulders. Why did you put that one in?
Les Crims was an incredibly influential photographer in the perhaps early 1980s into the mid-1980s as well, for a whole generation of photographers. And the photograph that I'm showing you in this exhibition, and it was photographed on July 4th, they're lining up, I believe, for a parade, is a little less controversial, shall we say, of a work that Les has done. But for me, there was something really interesting about this very genteel Martha's Vineyard scene on July 4th. It's very American. It's very upper class. He's having a very cheeky look at it. And I really enjoyed placing it next to four photographs by Nan Golden, who is a person who deals with a very different side of life. Mm-hmm. She's someone who is photographing in the New York underground and in counterculture in the 1970s and in particular in the 1980s as AIDS is becoming a crisis. And I loved putting the two of those together to show the different types of viewpoints of how people can photograph different aspects of American culture. And I think that's what's wonderful about being able to put together an exhibition by decade, is that different photographers have different ideas and they get to bounce off of each other within this single space. When you go to Blue Sky Gallery, you typically see a single photographer at any given time, which is great because you get to see a lot of their imagery. But how do those photographers speak to each other over time? Because they have had this common place to show, which is Blue Sky Gallery.
Just along, there's one by Jessica Todd Harper, which is very formal and sort of well-to-do. A woman self-portrait, her fiancé is in the corner of the mirror in the room, and the future in-laws are sitting around with her. But that's more contemporary. What do you think is going on now that people photograph in that way, the sort of focus on class?
Focus on class and maybe focus on the self as well. I think perhaps the postmodern world of thought, the ability to pick apart class structures and relationship structures and the like, and you start to see that happening in the first decade of Blue Sky, in the first room of the exhibition, where photographers begin to not just maybe make street photographs or make formal still life images or so on, but to take a more critical, questioning look at history, at the structure of history, at the structure of class and government and society. It was a real eye-opener, I think, for all of the art world, but for photography perhaps in particular, because of this direct relationship with the visible world, with a quote-unquote reality. Mm-hmm. And Jessica is someone who I know quite well. I did not know her work when it showed here in Blue Sky about 12 years ago. She and her husband were engaged for a very brief period of time, and she made this photograph while they were engaged, they had only dated very briefly and were only engaged for a short amount of time. And so she is suddenly in this space with these people and is very quickly going to become part of this new family. And I think you can feel that tension in the image. How does she fit in? She's the only person standing up in the mm-hmm. image. She's in a space that is not her own. We see the back of Chris, who is now her husband, in the image. But then if we look to the back of the room, we see his face reflected, and she and he are looking at each other in a way that is very different from the way that her future in-laws are looking at each other. So there's this wonderful exploration of self, of place within family. And that is something that too grows out of somebody like Nan Golden's work, who is shown to the left of Jessica's, that there are different types of families that mm-hmm. we have. And Nan's family in particular, and the family she chose to photograph, was this group of people who were dealing with very difficult things, with drug addiction, with violence, with being part of a city that the city was trying to suppress, dealing with friends quickly becoming sick and then dying. So who is one's family, and how do photographers express that through their imagery? Mm-hmm.
Has that always been a Blue Sky thing? I mean, if Blue Sky has a thing, what is it?
That's an excellent question. And a number of people, I think, have noted this, and it became very clear to me as I worked on the exhibition and in the 4.5 years that I've lived here. Blue Sky very quickly became concerned with socially concerned photography. There are other different terms for that, like social documentary. They are interested in the ways in which culture and society and politics affect the human condition. And so you will often see a more heavily weighted group of artists and bodies of work that deal with the human condition, whether it's overtly political or more subtle in some ways. The individual is often key to Blue Sky, and the manner in which the individual struggles through life mm-hmm. and deals with life is a key component and a real touchstone for Blue Sky.
You've just come back from Paris, where you were at Paris Photo.
Yes.
Which is a photo festival?
It is. So I think people are probably more familiar with Miami's Art Basel, where the contemporary art world goes to see and also to be seen. Paris Photo is similar in that if you are interested in photography, if you love photography, if you want to purchase photographs, if you want to see fellow curators, you want to see fellow artists, you go to Paris Photo. It's typically about 170 photography gallerists who work throughout the world and come together at the Grand Palais and set up shop and mini exhibitions, and everything is for sale.
So you go representing the Portland Art Museum. What are you doing? Are you there to buy photos?
Sadly, I am not there to buy photographs, and I wish that I were. We are structured in a way that I do not yet have dedicated funds to purchase photographs for the museum. And while my position is endowed, I don't have money that I can, at any given point in time, draw from to make purchases for the art museum, which as a curator makes me a little sad because I want to be able to go to Paris Photo and say, oh my gosh, this image that I see right here, I really need for the Portland Art Museum, and I would like to purchase it. There is an ecosystem that we have. We like to support gallerists. We like to support artists. Mm-hmm. So not having the ability at this point in time to do that regularly is frustrating. We have some generous donors who every so often will give me a small allotment of funds specifically to buy photography, and I am very, very grateful for that. But eventually the goal is to build up to an endowment, so that endowment sits in a bank and we draw down a certain percentage of money every year that would then allow me to go to Paris Photo, work with dealers and say, okay, these two photographs are perfect for our collection of over 7,000 works. I would like to purchase these. And augment the collection. I'm also very, very grateful to our many donors throughout the region and, in fact, throughout the world these days, who are collectors of photographs or gallerists who on occasion will give photographs to the museum. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that we augment the collection at this point. And I am able to acquire some beautiful, beautiful things. In fact, there is a donor who has lent a number of photographs to the Blue Sky exhibition, and she is now donating all the photographs that she lent to the exhibition to the museum. So we will have this wonderful record of some of the photographs that were in the Blue Sky exhibition stay at the museum, which is always a goal.
And in Paris, what trends did you see?
Wow, Perifoto is a place where you can see everything.
And are you there looking at very contemporary stuff?
There is some contemporary work, absolutely. And I'm always interested in looking and seeing more contemporary work. I'm always very hungry for contemporary photography because I'm so interested in figuring out where photography is going to go now, because I feel that the digital technology is really settling into itself now. There's a much better understanding of it and a fluidity with it now. So I want to know what photographers can do with that. What can they show me that I haven't necessarily seen before, whether it's conceptually or visually or in terms of subject matter? Mm-hmm. So I am very, very hungry to see new photography. So I saw some really beautiful new photography in a Japanese gallery. The Berlin galleries who come to Perifoto bring a lot of new exciting work as well. So it was a real kick in the pants for me in some ways, and really, really energizing for me.
Two things I've seen at Blue Sky that really kind of shook me were this picture, which you've got in the show, Clayton, Ata, Razup, Shank and Money.
Yes.
And it's some guy stoned and he's playing with his two dogs. They're probably pit bulls. They're like mean dogs, and he's riling them up. And it's a sort of snapshot, you know, it's an action photo of this guy. Mm-hmm. And you know, I feel like that takes me into a world that I'm not going in real life. And another one was these Japanese people kind of naked in plastic bags with the air all sucked out of them.
Right.
And it's some
photographer
kind of,
Hal.
Some kinky Japanese thing. And I went in, I was like, these are giant pictures. And you just think, what's going on here? And
right.
I love how they just bring you off to different worlds.
They do. And it's great that you bring up photographer Hal, because he's someone who is not represented in my exhibition. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't meaningful to people in Portland. And the ability of Blue Sky to bring in oftentimes emerging photographers from different places is really fantastic. And the first photograph you reference is by Matt Eich, who I think is a really exceptional photographer who crosses numerous boundaries. Sometimes he feels like a photojournalist, and I'm quite certain that his work regularly shows up in the New York Times and in Time magazine as well. But he's also someone whose work translates into the space of the art gallery. And the point that you make, that he's taking you to a world that you're not a part of, is exactly what I'm interested in when I'm looking at a new photographer's work. He is someone who charted the culture of a part of Ohio that used to be quite structured and, I don't know that I'd argue well off, but perhaps middle class, because of the mining industry that was there. But the mining industry, of course, has fallen off. And this part of Ohio where he was photographing has changed dramatically in income rates and in social ideology and ability of people to strive for the American dream, whatever one's opinion of the American dream is. So he is someone who has gone to a place and is making photographs in a place that I will probably not visit in my lifetime just because of the way that my life takes me. So he's showing me a world that I wouldn't otherwise see. And he's doing it in a way, and you mentioned this too, the composition is so dynamic. It's fierce. We're right in there with Clayton Ata and these two animals who feel like they might just tear us apart at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about contemporary photography, about vintage photography. If you're showing me something that I might not otherwise be able to see or access, and you're doing it in a really strong compositional way, your ace is in my book.
I'm going to Google Claytonator. I want to know what he's up to now.
Well, it might be the only place we see him. But Google Matt Eich. He's great, too. Really, really interesting work.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week was Julia Dolan, the Minor White Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum. She was talking about Blue Sky, the Oregon Center for the Photographic Arts at 40. A show which is on now through January the 11th at the Portland Art Museum. Thanks for coming in, Julia.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
This song could go on without any end, till you realize that your car is not your friend. We're all car addicts, let's just say no. Then those cars will have to go.
Help support KBOO Community Radio by donating your used car, truck, motorcycle, boat, or any other vehicle. We'll transform that old machine into resources for unserved and underserved communities, free training, recording equipment, and great programming for the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world. For more information, call 1-877-526-6123. That's 877-KBOO-123. Or go to kboo.fm/vehicle.
KBOO at the Clinton, a monthly film screening at the Clinton Street Theater, is proud to show Five Broken Cameras on Thursday, December 11th at 7 p.m. The first ever Palestinian film to be nominated for Best Documentary.